Choke points.
Let's go.
There is no mystery to how four-way stops work, so why do so many people mess it up? Joining us now, Seattle's only tenured professor of advanced traffic therapy, Chris Sullivan. Here he is.
Ooh, I like that. Does that come with a pay raise or
absolutely
bump? All right, very good. You know, I've never really understood why so many people get freaked out at four-way stops. I mean, I get it, but they're relatively easy to understand, but many drivers get confused. I'm bringing this up because a big Choke Points fan named Catherine asked me to go over the rules. And so, for those of you following at home, this is found in section 323 to 326 in the Washington Driver's Guide under the heading of right of way. As the guide points out, nobody actually has the right of way. Drivers must yield the right of way to others. I know it's a technical thing. I'm sure somebody went to law school to come up with the actual language of that. But the general rule is simple. The driver who gets to the intersection first goes first. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple. That means the driver who comes to a complete stop first. None of this rolling through nonsense, right? It's a complete stop.
And you have to stop at the line, too.
That
sometimes
is correct.
People will stop feet behind the line to be first.
That's like they stop like, no, that doesn't count. No. Now, if two cars arrive at the same time, the driver to the right goes first. Now, this only works if everybody is using their turn signals, so everybody knows where everyone is intending to go. Now, Catherine's question was a little bit more specific. What happens if you have the right of way, but there's a pedestrian in the mix now? So someone, say, is walking in front of you, but it's your turn to go. So number one rule here is drivers must always yield to pedestrians and bicyclists. But here's where I think the nuance comes in, where Catherine was getting at too. Okay, in this case, say the driver is waiting for that pedestrian to clear, another driver goes into the intersection. Well, yes, you can do that, but that first driver doesn't lose their place in line. They don't lose their place in the queue. They still get to go once that person has crossed their path, the pedestrian has crossed their path. I see a lot of people kind of thinking that the, who got there first applies here. Well, no, by definition, that person was already there before you. If you'd get there while they're waiting for a pedestrian.
What if the pedestrian is really slow?
Well, you still get to go. You don't lose your place in line.
I know, but
if it doesn't start over.
If it's somebody in a walker and
Again, you still were there by definition. Even if five cars arrive after you've been there, you're still at the intersection first. So you all just have to realize that.
Or just a polite wave.
And then also look at each other's drivers in the face is another good one.
Have you ever been in a wave off with another driver?
Yeah. And that's the thing I don't get here. The Seattle, you go. No, you go. No, you go. Somebody go. But again, the rules are pretty simple. Be courteous, use your signals, watch for pedestrians, and whoever gets there at a complete stop at the line goes first, and then you defer to the person to the right.
This is why every four-way stop should just be a roundabout now.
Yeah, maybe. By the way, this also applies to four-way stops where there are no signs, right? No yield signs, no stop signs, no traffic signals. Say you're out somewhere in a neighborhood or something and you come out of your, say for instance, right outside of my driveway, I have to take a left and then I'm basically at a four-way stop. There's someone coming at me and then we have cross traffic basically right there. You just kind of do what's right, okay? And again, in that circumstance, I was turning. The person going straight continues to, I must yield the right of way to them in most cases. I've even seen some driving instructors online who then go even into it. It's like, well, if you get there at the same time and you're in kind of a wave-off situation, the person going straight should get the before the person who turns. I'm like, I don't know. That seems to kind of complicate matters. At that point, I kind of get it. But again, pay attention, read the room. But the most important thing for Catherine's discussion is you do not lose your place in line just because you're yielding to a pedestrian.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like most drivers would disagree, but
I'm still saying people can cross while they're, I mean, people can enter the intersection while you're waiting. Certainly, I'm not telling everybody to wait.
Okay.
No. I'm not telling everybody to wait. Someone can go, but when the person passes, sometimes people think that, oh, well, it starts over the who got here first again, and that person loses their place. Mm-hmm. No. No. Okay. I mean, someone can cross, certainly, while that pedestrian is walking. I'm not saying you wait for the whole thing to clear, but they don't lose their place.
So here's what happened to me. I'm walking down the street. It's got no sidewalks. It's a street in a subdivision. And there's an oncoming school bus who stops in front of me and puts his lights on. Can I walk past the school bus, or do I have to wait until he discharges the kid?
You're walking.
Yeah.
You're fine.
I'm fine. Okay.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, as our good friend Rob McKenna would say, the RCW is silent on that issue.
Okay. Good.
I mean, how fast do you walk? Is there a threat of you running over kids?
Because I'm a fast walker.
You're a speed walker.
But man, make sure you're on the right-hand side of the school bus. I don't want you passing it on the left against the paddle.
Gotcha.
That would be dangerous.
Let's get the update on the gang rebellion underway in Haiti, which has trapped American citizens. CBS military analyst Jeff McCausland says the challenge now is getting access to an operating airport to get evacuated.
It appears right now the international airport in Port-au-Prince is, in fact, closed. And the city is closed due to ongoing violence in the streets. People are able to move out of Haiti either by helicopter, and some are being used to do that, or there appears to be an airport out of Cap-Haitien, north of Port-au-Prince. But travel from Port-au-Prince to that airport is perilous because the gangs control all the highways in between. It appears about 50 Americans were evacuated in the last 24 hours, some going to Florida, another group, a small group, being flown out by a helicopter. But again, unknown exactly how many Americans are in Haiti. Estimates at one time were in the thousands. And trying to move groups to locations where they could be evacuated right now is extremely, extremely difficult.
So why are there a significant number of Americans in Haiti? Because it's been on the do not travel list for quite a while now.
Well, that's exactly right. But there are still Americans, like there are in any country around the world, who are living there, doing business. Perhaps they have a Haitian spouse. This is not uncommon, even in a place as perilous like Haiti. At the time of the earthquake back in 2010, the estimates were there were about 40,000 American citizens who were actually living and working in Haiti at that time. Now, I'm confident that number has been reduced, but I would still estimate there are still probably several thousand American citizens living on the island.
So at this point, is there any kind of international force that could restore order to Haiti? Or, I mean, nothing has worked in the past. Are we just going to let it play out this time around?
None has been identified, Dave, except, of course, for these 1,000 Kenyan police officers who were supposed to go in and provide stability prior to the gangs basically taking control of Port-au-Prince and the highways throughout the country. So that has been put on hold. There has been the creation of this 9-member council that's going to rule the country and appoint a prime minister, but they haven't even identified the names of all the people who have accepted positions on that council. And the best of my knowledge, I've seen no talk about any type of peacekeeping force being formed. It's very clear the Biden administration in the United States is very uninterested in once again sending troops to Haiti.
Right. So far, though, there's no flotilla of refugees headed to the U.S.
Not so far, but clearly that's just a possibility because we see, you know, actually dramatic shortages of food, basic supplies, scarcity of water, health care. Combine that with large-scale violence. About 1 million people are right now considered to be food-deprived. And the last time we got in this kind of condition back in 1994, about 50,000 Haitians fled the island, and a large number of them actually ended up in Guantanamo. And we actually established a camp at Guantanamo. This all predates 9/11, which was called Camp Haitian. I actually visited that place at one particular time.
CBS military analyst Jeff McCausland, he also gave us the update on the fighting in Gaza, which is that Israel is pushing ahead with the elimination of Hamas, even if it means fighting in hospitals.
They're still conducting clearing operations throughout the Gaza Strip. A large operation is being conducted around the Al-Shifa Hospital, which is in North Gaza, because the Israelis claim that Hamas was still using that as a network site, command and control site, still connected by some tunnel complexes, despite the fact that there was still a large number of refugees huddled around that particular hospital. The real question right now, of course, is when and if Israel is going to conduct an offensive against Rafah in the very southern part of the Gaza Strip, where there are somewhere around 1.4 million people crammed into this small city that prior to the war was about 300,000.
Do we have any estimate of how much of Hamas remains to be eliminated?
Well, the Israelis say they have killed somewhere around a third or more of Hamas fighters. And if that's true, there were estimates at the onset that there were about 25,000 or so Hamas fighters. So that'd be 8,000 or 9,000 that they have killed. Obviously, a substantial number of Hamas fighters have also been wounded or injured, captured along the way as well. But they haven't given any precise numbers you know, in the aggregate of overall casualties for Hamas. But there's still clearly Hamas fighters operating throughout the Gaza Strip, most notably, of course, down there in Rafah, where the Israelis say there are still several battalions of Hamas fighters holed up in the city.
And in Ukraine, the Russians apparently are thinking of talking about consolidating whatever gains they've made. I understand that Ukraine is still fighting back, but without additional U.S. help. Are they getting weapons from anybody?
Yeah, they're getting substantial weapons from across the Europeans. In the last few days, Czech Republic has stepped forward and is in the process of acquiring up to 800,000 artillery shells internationally that it's going to provide to Ukraine. Germans just announced a new military assistance package for Ukraine, as did Finland. But there's clear evidence, to my mind, that the Europeans are starting to be very, very concerned about not only United States leadership in terms of the war in Ukraine, but frankly, United States leadership in NATO overall. And I think now are beginning to make their own efforts to expand their own industrial capabilities and their own military forces.
So is that a bad thing? I mean, Republicans would argue it's about time that Europe stepped up.
It's not a bad thing necessarily, and certainly every administration, Democratic, Republican, since the onset of NATO in 1949, I think the first president to criticize Europeans for not spending enough on their defense was Harry Truman. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's been consistent across the history of the United States. That being said, a total step back by the United States, I think, would encourage Mr. Putin to be more aggressive. Frankly, probably encourage President Xi to be more aggressive. And we've got a sad history, if you look back in the 1930s and 40s, of when democracies don't come together and we've got aggressive autocracies at work around the world. Furthermore, one of the big issues would be if, in fact, Europeans begin to believe they cannot rely on the United States, then many of them, I think, will be encouraged to acquire their own nuclear weapons. And certainly they have the industrial capacity. If you looked at Germany, if you looked at Sweden, if you looked at Finland, looked at Poland, places like that, where they could quickly acquire their own nuclear weapons for their own protection. And I'm not necessarily sure that would be a happier world.
So you're saying that the Chinese leadership could look at our inaction in Ukraine as a green light to invade Taiwan?
Absolutely. I mean, the Japanese prime minister stood in the streets of Kyiv about a year ago and during a press conference said, if you want to deter Chinese aggression in the South China Sea, what you have to do is be successful here in Ukraine.
CBS military consultant Jeff McCausland. Thank you, Jeff.
Take care, Dave.
Now your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. A 77-year-old woman is being celebrated around the world for her insistent kindness. CBS's lead national correspondent David Begno traveled to Oceanside, California to meet Gail Noble.
Oh my, my, look at all of these goodies.
Since she retired, she has made a job out of making people feel good.
What you got in here?
The muffins and the Oreos from the post office.
Almost every day, she drives around Oceanside, delivering goodies to people she thinks are working those thankless jobs, like the post office, where she used to work.
Your muffins.
She skirted the line and a little bit of personal space.
Yeah.
No time to chit-chat. She was off to her next spot. At the UPS store.
Thank you, Gail.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Keeping us fed. She'll tell us, you guys have to have such a hard job. I know what you're going through. I've done it before. And here's some muffins to get you through the day.
And boy, does that make their day. As we saw following her around Trader Joe's.
Thank you so much, Gail. Oh, my God, Gail. Give some love.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Every day, this woman, yeah. She's an angel. There's a halo under this hat.
When did you start doing this, these random acts of kindness?
Probably I was like 5 or 6. My grandpa would let me go to the store and buy different things, and then he would take me where I wanted to give them. And he started, you know, nurturing that.
In you?
Yeah.
To give to others.
He said that's our job in life.
And now, Gail's giving nature is moving people all over the world.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Nissa, who created and manages Gail Tales. It's an Instagram account dedicated to Gail's kindness.
What was your wish for your children to be when they grow up?
What they wanted to be.
It's a place where people shower this 77-year-old widow with nothing but love.
Because of Gail's kindness, I chose to be better. I follow Gail because I like her kindness, but also I think I believe she's a role model.
You're a perfect example of how everybody should act all the time and just not waste time judging others.
The response has been overwhelming.
Yeah, they love her so much. And I think they love what she represents. It's giving a lot of people freedom to be themselves. And that, what a beautiful thing to be loved and accepted for who you are.
That is David Begnaud. I've actually been following that account on Instagram. Yeah. And then to see David do a story on it, really fun. And the account does bring a lot of joy.
7:48. Now joining us from the Gian Ursula Show, which starts at 9 right here in Car News Radio, is G. Scott. So the University of Washington hired an athletic director by the name of Troy Dannon. How long ago?
Less than six months ago, yeah.
And now he's already gone. So what's behind that? And what does an athletic director do anyway? I've never understood.
Oh, well, they're in charge of the athletic department. They are the big boss.
So they hire
They hire the coaches. They oversee everything. The coaches, the scheduling, the conference bids, all types of stuff.
How
they
did
have
they
a big
not
job.
Put him under contract when they hired him? How is he able to leave 6 months later?
I mean, well, I'm sure he's under contract. A lot of people are under contract.
But if I sign a contract here and 6 months later say I'm leaving to go work for another radio station, mm-hmm. they'd be like, uh-uh.
No, anyway, well, they could just say yes.
The other company could be like, okay, we'll just whatever that buyout is or whatever they want to charge you, we'll pay that.
But what's going on? What's the reason? What could be better than being the AD at the University of Washington?
You know what? Bam! There it is. I'm glad you said that. First of all, he just left to go to Nebraska.
Yeah,
Nebraska football. The Nebraska, it's huge. It's bigger than UW football.
Because our last athletic director left for Alabama, right? Which is also a big...
SC.
Yeah.
So,
what's South Carolina?
USC.
USC.
Southern California. So my question is who are UW fans or anybody... Are you mad at Troy? Because if you are mad, you're basically saying that you yourself would never leave a situation for better for you and your family. That's number one. Number two, this person Troy goes over to Nebraska. He's going to be making more money. And Nebraska, by the way, has been in the Big Ten. UW, even though they're just joining the Big Ten, they're not about to get the big share yet for a few years. So Nebraska
is more fallout from the whole Pac-12 thing. Then.
Yeah. This destination, you know what it reminds me of? Have you ever been with some friends after one of your friends has been broken up with? And then you all are sitting around and you're just all blaming. Yeah, that guy's a jerk. I can't believe they did that to you. I would have never left you. Meanwhile, instead of being a real friend and saying, but well, what did you do? Right?
Oh, wow.
Because sometimes a real friend will say, yeah, they left you, but what did you do? So today, everybody is talking bad about Troy. How dare he leave here in less than 6 months? I cannot believe
it. What did UW do to him?
I don't think UW did anything to him. Mm-hmm. I think there's something going on that's more than just Troy. Because Kalen DeBoer left. Jen Cohen left. Does anybody remember when Chris Peterson just... all of a sudden, stop coaching?
What's happening? Because they just...
Yeah. I don't know.
They had a great season. There's a lot of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Fans are... I mean, what could be going on?
Well, Kalen DeBoer did a great job as a head coach, despite the recruiting classes that are coming in. So if you look at the recruiting class, if you go back to 2022, it's funny, it's all in the notes. It's all on Google. You guys can look it up. 2022, they had the 59th ranked recruiting class. 2023, they had the 29th ranked recruiting class. And right now, they're ranked 29th. Mm-hmm. So even though, by the way, we all thought the season that they had was incredible. It's not a destination for recruits.
Why not? We're not offering enough to talented players to come here. Is that what it is?
You know what? No, you're not. You're absolutely not. You're not offering what Georgia's offering. You're not offering what Ohio State's offering.
What would a typical
offering.
Offer be? Tell me.
A typical offer?
Yeah, I mean, what could you if you're a talented quarterback material? You know, if you're the successor to Penix. What kind of package would you have to get?
This is just me taking a guess.
Go ahead.
Okay? I don't know. I don't know anything.
Fire away.
A guess would be a quarterback coming out of high school into college is probably going to get closer to $750,000+.
A year? Or total?
For the deal. Total. Well, no, actually, it's going to be revisited, so you're going to probably get it for the year.
And that's paid by boosters?
You pay by boosters and the fans. We've talked about this, right?
Yeah.
Boosters and the fans, you pay that. So I'm going to tell you, the NIL packages right now as of today that are offered, University of Washington does not compare to some of these other places.
Name, image, likeness. So we're not offering the – because this is like becoming – it's the NFL now, right?
Right. But a lot of times – but people are – a lot of times people are mad – about this NIL because they are mad because some of these kids, they just leave. They don't show any loyalty, but they forget adults do the same thing.
That's okay. What it is. I hear your point now.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Adults do the same thing.
It's a business now.
It's a business. So again, a lot of people are mad at Troy, but would you leave for more money right now?
And don't forget Troy's wife's family's from Nebraska.
Oh,
they got deep family ties.
Bury the lead, G.
I was just thinking, why do you go to a place that's so flat? There's no mountains.
It's so
cost
beautiful here.
Cost of living is going to be lower.
Right.
Money's going to stretch further.
Yeah, but the ADs, don't they make millions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, no, he's going to go make some money. Yeah.
Right.
Not as much as the head coaches.
Okay.
See y'all.
Welcome to the studio. Insulin could get a lot cheaper because now you can get it from cows. Here's Cairo News Radio's Mickey Gomez.
University of Illinois professor Matt Wheeler and his team genetically altered a Jersey cow so its milk is laced with insulin that might be able to treat diabetes in humans. He says it was even easier than he thought it would be.
We expected to have to take the milk, purify the proinsulin, and then process it and genetically degrade it into insulin for it to be active. Well, the cow did it herself.
He says the next step is to duplicate the process in Holstein cows because they produce a lot of milk.
Average Holstein cow in the Midwest or California would produce somewhere around 80 liters of milk a day.
Wheeler believes the cows could make a gram of insulin per liter of milk, and that could treat 3,000 diabetic patients. He says this is a game changer.
As you know, over the last 20 years, the cost of insulin has gone up 600%.
He says eventually
a child with diabetes doesn't have to take a shot anymore. Maybe one day they can take a pharmaceutical glass of milk and that's it, or yogurt or ice cream or...
I asked him if the pharmaceutical industry is upset about the study.
Well, I'm sure there's some folks that are not happy about it. But that, I mean, I'm an academic scientist at a public institution. My job is to help, you know, feed people and hopefully alleviate, you know, disease. And so that's what we're going to do. So
Mickey Gomez, Cairo News Radio.
So Mickey sounds a little too happy about this. You could get insulin at the grocery store.
Maybe one day. I mean, that's kind of the hope, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe you'd go to the pharmacist or the pharmacy and like they'd have, you know, insulin milk or insulin yogurt or something.
I heard
like
you
that.
Asking him in the interview yesterday, which was quite a lively interview. Mm-hmm. Doing it in the middle of the newsroom and we were kind of overhearing it. And I heard you ask him why cows, why not goats, why not any other animal, why cows?
Yeah, because they're bigger. Mm. And they produce more milk.
Okay.
He said that he works with cows and he worked with pigs as well. And he thought, wow, if we could get this at a pig, why not a cow?
Yeah.
And especially let's do it. Let's do this Jersey cow. So they did it in Sao Paulo, Brazil, with his partner, who's I believe his name is Paulo Manzano. And so together they came up with it took them 10 years to come up with this plan. 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, they needed funding and the funding wasn't there. And so they kept having to ask for funding and then they would take a couple of steps forward and then they'd need more funding. But now the funding is really coming in. And so they're able to expand the study. And next is going to be Holstein cows.
Wow. I imagine the pitch, though. We're going to make insulin in the udder of a cow.
Yes.
Oh, that's perfect.
Here's my money.
Yeah.
But this could be an income source for farmers, too, couldn't it?
Quite possibly. I mean, we're not there yet. He's not there yet. It's only been done in one cow, and she did it beautifully. She's a brown Jersey cow, and now she's an older cow because I asked, you know, is she, like, living it up in Brazil? And he's like... She's doing just fine. You know, none of the other cows know that she makes insulin.
So
like,
no,
like none of the other cows think
they're not
that
jealous
she's,
or anything.
Right. They're not jealous. Yeah. She looks like an average Jersey cow.
And it's not harmful to the cow, though.
It is not harmful to the cow. And that was another thing that I asked. I'm like, well, is this cow, you know, hurt? Is she like hooked up to wires and things? You're like, no, she's out there grazing, living her best life. She's older. I want to say she's an older cow, older bovine.
Yeah. So not producing calves anymore, no. How do they do it? Do they inseminate her to produce the milk? Or?
Well, no. So what ended up happening is they inserted some kind of casein protein into her udders. Mm-hmm. And then her udders just, the mammary gland is what it is, actually. Yeah. And then the mammary gland just knew exactly what to do to reproduce.
So she doesn't have to be with calf to do
that's
this.
That's right. Wow. They did lactation induction. Mm-hmm. And what lactation induction is when someone, including a human, I did lactation induction. It's when you can produce milk without being pregnant.
Yeah. You do that for your kids?
I did that for my kids.
I didn't know you could do that in humans, too.
Yeah.
You're learning so much.
I know.
Science with Mickey.
Insulin-producing cows, utterly fantastic. I have to say that.
Mickey Gomez. Thank you, Mickey.
Time to move over for traffic.
8:54. Boy, glad this is almost over.
Don't give me the thumbs. Our producer's giving me the thumbs down. Come on. This is rife for puns.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.